Welcome to The Thriving Marriage, the podcast for those who want to get their spouse back in love with them and truly thrive.
You'll learn why 95% of people don't save their marriage and the secret method no one else is talking about that will change everything for you. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Let's turn tragedy to triumph.
Here are your hosts, international marriage experts, Mark Johnston and Heather Choate.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to our weekly podcast. We're going to be talking about that statement, I love you, but I'm not in love with you. We want to talk about how you go from that to a loving relationship again. We want to go over some of the big mistakes that a lot of people make after they hear the statement. What I want to do is I want to discuss different starting points, whether your spouse will barely speak to you, all the way to where they recognize some of the changes, but still really don't want to commit. So I want you to learn how to have your spouse actually enjoy looking forward to talking with you again, learn how to actually get them to trust in the changes. And that's what we want to discuss all this week here. But before we get to that, Heather, I think you have a client win of the week.
Yeah, this one was shared with permission from Jude. So thank you, Jude. And Jude says, biggest win yet. After 2 months and was doing everything wrong until I started the program and changed my whole outlook and stubborn ways, was heartbreaking to hear she was moving into her own townhouse last week. But it simply turned to me to missing me and reached out. We talked here and there, but yesterday she called me out of the blue and we had a great talk. Even better today and tonight she dropped more hints than a little that she wants to get back together. So he's starting out in the path process. He recognized that at the beginning he was not doing things in the most effective way and got to the point where his wife wanted out and then realized, I actually miss you, and starting reaching out. And so helping him open up that communication and open up that connection is really, really powerful. So if you're in this kind of situation right now where you feel like everything I've been doing hasn't really been working yet, then I encourage you to learn more about the PATH process that helps you to connect with each other and increase the opportunities to communicate and to rebuild that connection there. So it's awesome. All right.
Yeah, I mean, this is a great thing. This is why I love this job, is we hear stuff like this all the time. And now, while I didn't work directly with Jude is following our program, and just it's a nice feeling to know that, like, something that, you know, we've done, Heather, is really making an impact in someone else's life. So we love hearing these wins. It's a great part of working in this field here.
Yep, it's what drives us to do it. Have change in the world to shift the way that we view our relationships and each other so that we solve and heal a lot of the things that are going on and make a radical shift in our world. That's what our entire intention is here at High Thrive Coaching. So let's talk about, I love you, but I'm not in love with you. How many of us have heard that? If you're watching us live, if you're joining us from the Thriving Marriage group, go ahead, leave a comment, say, I have. We often hear this. In fact, Mark, how often would you say you hear this statement from your clients?
I would say that this is probably one of the most common starting points that I have a lot of my clients in. So I think more this than any other. I'd say up there with, we have a lot of people dealing with affairs. We have a lot of people dealing with this statement. And less so some other problems. So I would say this is probably one of the most common issues that we see with a lot of our clients.
Absolutely. I do a masterclass about every single week. And, you know, audience ranges from about 40 to 120 people a week. And this is always one of the most common stories. If you remember the PATH process, it's uncover their story, the reasons why they want out. And this is always at the top of the list. So
before we, you know, go into like a little bit further, I'm just curious. You're talking about master classes. And you know what? I just thought about this for a second. I don't think we've ever done like a big major class on this. Like, I know, you know, part of the reason why we're talking about it this week is we did just have a new training in our subscription material talking specifically about this. But, you know, as I was creating, I felt like there was so much more to discuss. Like I could have made 3-4 or more training, like just to go through every step in depth. And, you know, I'm wondering how many of you out there would like us to put out a more formal program specifically addressing this issue. You know, we like to hear back from the audience. We've done bigger classes, you know, for specific problems like affairs or for other very specific issues. So if you would be interested in a bigger class on this, let us know in the comments. We like to hear from you, and we like to tailor some of our content and our services for what you all need.
Absolutely. I love that. Right. And so, Mark, we hear a lot of different stories, right, from our spouses. The reasons why they're wanting out. We hear you just won't change, or I see that you're changing, but it's only temporary, or I don't trust you, or I'm in love with someone else, or maybe it's better for the kids if we're not fighting all the time, right? All these different things. I need to find myself. But how is this story here, this problem of I love you, but I'm not in love with you, how is this different from other problems and other stories that we hear?
I think one of the big differences is that this isn't so much about like single events or big pain points. This is more of a death by a thousand cuts sort of situation, where you know, things have happened where a spouse has felt neglected for quite some time, and just no one has spoken up about it. No one has done anything different about it, you know, as opposed to something like, say, an affair. An affair might have some similar roots to it. It might be similar, but now this person is like, okay, I'm going to get out, and I don't care what other people, how this affects other people. This is still a situation where your spouse cares about you. They still don't want to hurt you. They just don't want to be with you anymore. An affair is different. This is also different from a situation where your spouse might be describing you as this terrible person, where there's a lot of anger or hatred or resentment, you know, such as if you have engaged in an affair, or if there's been, you know, like this big offense. So this is different because the anger and resentment tend to be a little bit lower, and there's still basic care for you. It's just that love is gone, and the person is tending to say, okay, well, I need something better in my life, then I need to get away from this person right now.
Okay. One thing that I've noticed in working with now, you know, hundreds, thousands of people, is that, and you let me know if this is what you've noticed as well, Mark, that the spouse that's saying this, I love you, but I'm not in love with you, generally is an actually really caring person, generally doesn't intentionally try to hurt people, manipulate them, cause harm. They're generally someone that likes to try to nurture relationships and take care and are generally pretty kind. And this is a way of saying, like, to try to let you down a little easier. But like you said, it's kind of like death by a thousand cuts, right? So trying to kind of soften the blow because they know that this is really, really painful and that it's hurting you. And they're trying to make it hurt less while still trying to get what they need.
Yes, that exactly. We see this all the time where the person leaving is trying to babysit their partner's feelings. And that's not a great position to be in, because that also means that if they are, you know, taking care or caution for your feelings, it means that they're not being as open as they could or should be to fix some of this. They don't feel like they could be as open. And we're going to see some of that as we explain basically different stages in this sort of problem or what's going on. But yeah, absolutely. We see that a lot.
Yeah. So what do we see happening in a relationship when someone says, I love you, but I'm not in love with you? What is kind of the effect of what's going on there?
So this generally means that one or more of a few of these things from this list essentially is going on. And I do feel like these are kind of sequential. So if you are missing some of the first ones, you're much more likely to be missing some of the later ones. So either your spouse is unable to relax around you, meaning there's a lot of tension, there's a lot of neediness, there's a lot of desperation, there's a lot of, pushing on things, or perhaps there's a lack of consideration or respect. Maybe you're focused on yourself. Maybe they are unable to focus on what they're looking for, things like that. But if they're unable to be at ease around you, then this is really going to kill any ability to have that romantic love in the relationship. Or two, there's an inability to even enjoy speaking with each other, or the third one is enjoy spending time with one another. So for instance, if one of you is consistently shutting down conversation, or a conversation is very limited or shallow, or perhaps if you're focused a lot on yourself, and what you're doing, or perhaps if you shut down conversations about your spouse's interests, they're not going to enjoy speaking to you as much. And similarly, if we do the same thing with your time together, I hear this a lot, and I tend to hear it more from men. This is just my observation. I'm not going to say that this is a hard law or this happens in all cases, but I tend to hear the men tending to focus a little bit more on their own hobbies and unwilling to engage in their wife's interests or hobbies. Things like that is going to really kill any ability to enjoy spending time together. Or four, if there's an inability to trust each other. This I would see is, the first few tend to be a little bit easier to overcome. And I see a lot of our clients struggle to get past this hurdle right here. Whether this is trust in new changes, whether this is trust because there has been some infidelity, perhaps this is a trust about being able to be open or vulnerable. But quite often the obstacle, at least with our clients right here, is if they don't believe that changes are long lasting. And if that's the case, this statement is still going to be in effect. They're going to still say, I love you, but I'm not in love with you, because they say, okay, if I go back into this, I can't trust that it won't be this blah, unfulfilling relationship. And then, five, if you can have all that, then, if you don't have positive feelings for each other, if you don't have this appreciation, this fondness, if you don't actually like your spouse, it's really hard to move to the next step of more romantic feelings, more in love type feelings.
Okay. So given this kind of sequential list here, encourage everyone to kind of take some time and check in with yourself on what you're experiencing in your relationship. But how do you really know which of these are missing? Like, what's a way that we can tell what might be missing in the relationship?
I think that's a really good question. I was about to say, oh, it's really easy to tell, but I guess this just happens to be what we do every day. So I'm like, oh, that's a simple thing, right?
Yeah. It's not simple, and we understand that.
I get it. Like, if you had asked me, 10 years ago, something like that, like, how do you know where the problem, I wouldn't have been able to tell you that back then. It's because there's not really support out there on how to have a successful marriage. It's just, I don't know about you, Heather, but Jen and I, when we actually first were talking about getting married, we decided to take a pre-marriage course through our church. Mm-hmm. and I'm looking back at that now, and we thought, okay, we're going to prepare ourselves. But looking back at it now, it was nothing against people at our church or anything, but it was junk. It didn't really. They're really well intentioned, and this was a class specifically on how do you have a good marriage, but. But what I'm getting at is, on this tangent is, it's understandable if people don't know how to navigate these tricky situations, because there really isn't support out there for this sort of thing. But anyways, your question. What?
Like though, I want to contrast what you guys did. At least you guys took a course and were like, yeah, we should probably develop some skills. I did probably what, you know, 90% or more of people do, which I was like, oh, we're just so in love. Our love will carry us through. Like, we're so passionate. Like, we were head over heels in absolute love. And then I learned later that that's the infatuation stage. And I fell into the trap like a lot of people do. And I think this ties in really quick. I'm going to take a bit of a tangent here, and then we'll go into knowing what the spouse is missing. Okay. what's missing there.
We need to have our tangent here.
But the big, you know, I guess misunderstanding is that we always have to be on cloud nine. We have to, like, that infatuation stage. It's this expectation that our culture has, and I believe that we kind of just have as human beings or something, that super high, passionate, head over heels infatuation is going to last 80 years of marriage, right? Mm. And that it should be like that the whole time. And then if that part is missing, then something's wrong. And I fell into that trap too. So the part where, you know, we're just kind of going through the routine. We had a couple kids, life got more challenging, things got more blah. And then I started to feel like, wait, where'd the passion go, right? We're just kind of going through the motions here. And if you believe, like I did, and many, many people do, that you have to be at that cloud nine level your entire marriage, you're setting yourself up for failure, because that's not really what true love is. That is a aspect of love. And just like all aspects of love, like the three levels of love, which would be infatuation, then contractual, which is kind of the give and take, working as a team. If it's done healthy, if it's not, then it causes absolute chaos. And then third would be unconditional love. I just love you no matter what. I love you for who you are. Okay. So I just want to kind of put that little plug in there, since you talked about you guys had preparation that things are going to be hard. I didn't. Like, I thought, like, love is all you need, right? That's all we hear. Love is all you need, right? And so I thought, that's all I need. And that love will carry us through. And when challenges came, then I thought something was broken. And so this is another reason why a lot of people will say, well, our marriage must not be what I want. It must be, there's something wrong, because we don't have those high infatuation feelings for each other anymore. And to me, that's a myth. True love is something that you work on, and that, like, that infatuation is a piece of it, but it cannot be the entire base of your marriage. Otherwise you will feel like you need out, because you're in love with them, but you're not in love. That feeling of, I'm not in love, right? Okay. So let's go back. That was my tangent. And I hope that
what you're talking about is sometimes referred to as I've heard it called the Disney marriage, like, yes. The idea that there's the happily ever after. And don't get us wrong. There can absolutely be like a high amount of love, passion, even, you know, later in your marriage. But like, I keep pointing this way because you look like you're left on my computer. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it does require work, like you said, if you want that kind of relationship. But anyways, back to the original question after we've now taken 10 minutes of tangents or so.
Yeah.
Is how do we tell
if one of these is missing?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, easiest one to diagnose is that whether you can be able to relax or have some calm atmosphere around each other. Because if you don't have that, your spouse is going to have really strict boundaries. They're going to say, we can only talk to each other about our kids. We can only do X, Y, or Z. And like, they have very strict boundaries and get very upset if you cross those lines at all. It might seem like really perplexing. You say, well, I just wanted to ask, like, just the other day, I had a client say, you know, my wife got really upset at me when I asked her about her day, because she seemed a little off. And then she's like, we're only supposed to talk about the kids, and got really upset at him. Well, it's because of this right here. You will also see a lot of avoidance or shutting down. So if you approach even with a somewhat, you know, positive or cordial sort of greeting, and they don't respond, they don't greet you back, things like this really point to say a lot of things are missing and they don't even feel comfortable around you, which, you know, if you have that high amount of tension, it's going to be, well, we see that's really not a good situation for having loving feelings. Now, if it's something like, you know, one of the next couple, like they don't enjoy speaking with you or spending time with you, they're still going to, you know, if they can at least be relaxed around you, they'll spend time around in the house. But as long as you don't really engage them, as long as you don't bring up problems, as long as you don't bring up the relationship, they might be fine around you.
Kind of that surface level, but you can't really go deep. You can't really talk about the relationship.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's exactly what you said right there, Heather, that surface level relationship where you can talk about business, you can talk about the kids maybe, but as soon as you veer off, I know that might sound similar, but if they can't relax around you, it goes a little bit deeper and there's going to be more avoidance. There's going to be more anger when you cross any amount of boundaries. Mm-hmm. I do see some situations where as soon as they start talking about anything in depth, that's when you start seeing a lot more retreating or a lot more resentment and anger popping up. And similarly, maybe you can have conversations. Maybe they'll even have these good conversations with you. They enjoy talking to you, but they feel like, okay, things are blah. I was talking with another client the other day, and her husband had a really interesting hobby. He races pigeons. Or birds of some sort. And, you know, what?
I did not know that existed.
You know what? I heard about that just it came on my radar probably a couple of years ago. Like someone else was talking to me about this huge passion of theirs and racing birds. And I was like, okay. All right. So this is, apparently there's now at least two people. The person from a couple of years ago and this client's spouse. So at least two of them. But, you know, what would happen in their relationship is he would only want to engage in his hobbies, you know, hunting or racing birds, and really didn't want to do anything that the wife wanted to do. Now, my client was the wife in this situation, but she was telling me, she's like, it just became uninteresting to do this because there's so much focus on himself. And so she retreated. And as a result, they were in this situation where he was saying, I love you, but I'm not in love with you anymore. Almost like it was the reverse. Like he was doing this poor behavior and creating the situation for himself. We're going to have trust issues if you're hearing a lot of, statements saying that they don't believe that changes are going to change are real. That they say that you're only changing because I'm leaving, or they say it's just going to go back to the way it was, or they say, yeah, you're saying that things are different now, but how do I know? You're going to hear a lot more of those statements. They might even be hanging around with you. They might even be trying to engage in physical intimacy with you, but they won't make that commitment. They won't turn that corner to actually working on the marriage. And so we can see like lots of different, to me, it seems pretty straightforward, but you know, it might not be for everyone, but those are the things I most commonly see at those different stages. That's awesome. There's a comment on here saying my dad raised pigeons. So three people have this hobby at least.
I want to check it out. Maybe it's
maybe it's for you, Heather.
Maybe one of my eight kids will pick up on it. Anyway.
There's a family.
Yeah. So again, I encourage everyone to go back through those kind of questions, right? If you're noticing some of those things in your spouse's behavior, that's an indication that you're missing one of those things that could be leading up to this belief of, you know, I love you, but I'm not in love with you. So Mark, would these just help me get some clarity, because maybe other people are asking this question, because I know we have some A+ students here that have been following PATH for a while and have been using PATH. Are these things that you're talking about here some of the core, like, root issues? We talk about root issues behind the symptom, right? The story. Are these some ways to uncover what some of those root issues are?
Yeah, I think that this is a really good way to figure that out. So just as a reminder, what we're talking about when we talk about root issues, we're talking about the problems that cause other problems. And this is why, you know, we can go, you know, in terms of our PATH program, this links really heavily to the perspective piece, really trying to understand why is your spouse leaving. But also there's that narrative piece, the telling a new story, the T in PATH, where you kind of have to understand what their narrative is, especially with that trust piece. You know, if they're saying, I just don't believe in that changes can be real, I don't think that you're going to be any different at all. You know, those sort of beliefs, that story is causing a huge obstacle towards reconciliation.
Yeah. Awesome. Do you want to go on another little tangent?
Sure.
This is the show Tangents. Question from our one of our Facebook Thriving Marriage Mastery, or not Thriving Marriage members. Where is God in all of this? Once you have his standards in mind, you stop thinking this way. And so I appreciate that comment. And Mark and I, we both are believers in God ourselves. And I would agree with that. But whether you have that belief or not, what happens when you get kind of a higher level perspective is that, yes, you do have that. But we all have to understand that regardless of faith or belief in God, sometimes we just lose sight of that, right? We're human beings. And so as we lose sight of that, sometimes your partner might lose sight of that and they don't have that perspective. When you don't have that perspective, then these things can happen. And so if you're in that kind of situation, then we want to be able to help give you some solutions there.
I want to point out that this sort of thing right here, this statement, like I said, Heather and I, we both believe in God. We both, you know, we are both religious individuals. But I'm going to say that this statement, if you're thinking this way and you're saying, okay, well, if my spouse just was closer to God, this wouldn't be a problem. But this sort of statement is going to lead towards something where your spouse, if you keep hammering on that, they're not going to be able to relax around you. Mm-hmm. A little bit what I'm thinking that you're talking about here, Heather, is there needs to be an ability to kind of accept where you are at right now or where your spouse is at. And if you can't, we're actually going to talk a little bit about this in a bit. If you can't, it really kills a lot of these different steps that are needed to be able to get back to that loving situation. So, you know, sure, have faith. I think that's a great thing. It puts you in a good mindset. As long as you're not saying, well, because my spouse isn't having faith, they're doing something wrong. Because if you keep hammering on that, you're going to kill your ability to get back together. It just does not create a accepting, empathic sort of atmosphere.
Right. Awesome. Thank you. Because if one person's thinking that, then so are some others. So that helps. Yeah. All right. So can you ever feel when something is wrong with your spouse, with Jen? Can you ever just feel something's wrong
with her? Now, this is a great thing about, you know, long-term relationships is we do have this ability to kind of read the room. And you know, I even without my wife Jen saying so, I can usually tell that something is off. And it's, you know, it might be one of these things. I can feel that tension if something is wrong, or I can see that she starts retreating. And I'm sure, Heather, you probably see the same thing with Ben. I'm absolutely sure. But I'm guessing here, Heather, that there's also been times that you might not have caught that. Even being married as long as you or I have, we don't always get it every time.
Right.
Am I right?
100%. Just happened this week. So, yeah.
So this is the thing. This is how these these different levels, how we get to this point is, you know, if you continually get to that point where something is wrong and you're not catching it, or you're saying, okay, it's not a big deal, this is how you get to the point where you can't relax around each other. You can't you can't talk with each other or spend time together. It's because of these little moments right here that repeatedly get missed that this sort of situation happens. Now, this is a question for you, Heather, but also for the audience. And I want to put it into the chat if you have an opinion on this. What do you think prevents a lot of these things? What do you think prevents that relaxation, that enjoyment of your time together or your conversations? What prevents trust? I want to know what you all think is getting in the way. I want to know what you think, Heather, is getting in the way of this.
Yeah, so starting kind of from the bottom up, I guess. Trust, obviously, when trust is broken, there's a major breach in trust that gets in the way of it, that prevents that feeling there. And if it isn't healed in the right way, if it's anything swept under the rug, which I guess would apply to all these levels, right? If we're just sweeping something under the rug rather than actually healing it, that's like putting a Band-Aid on a cancer tumor, right? It's just going to fester. It's just going to grow. And so sweeping things under the rug, not addressing them, there's that. I also see, though, and this is part of the journey that I went through, the challenges that I had, was internal limiting beliefs, like deeper insecurities. I'm not good enough, therefore people are going to leave me. And so I really shouldn't trust them fully, because if I do, I'm just setting myself up to get hurt. Right. So that's another thing that if you sum that up,
it sounds like there's like a lack of safety, a lack of safety within their relationship is a lot of
security. Yeah. Relaxation means that there's been some kind of tension that happened. And unless you heal whatever caused that to come up, then the tension is only going to persist, and then you're not going to be able to relax or feel safe with each other. That tension could be caused from arguments. It could be caused from criticism, blame. It could be caused by hurt feelings that weren't expressed, those kind of things. In fact, that's what I missed this week was a hurt feeling on Ben's part. I'm more of an extrovert. He's more of an introvert. And so I don't always see the things that are going on inside of him. But then eventually I'll tell down the road, oh, something happened here. Why is he feeling tense around me? You know, why is he being a little more emotionally withdrawn? But I want to know, yeah, like Mark said, what do you guys think are the things that prevent these things from happening? So
I'm looking at some of them, and I actually have a list here about what tends to drain these things. So I want to see whether it matches up here with some of the comments. So I'm seeing undermining thoughts and phrases, not talking about issues, focusing on the hurt, always gets this person to spiral. Let's see, a feeling that we cannot talk about hard things. It's because unable to be emotionally supportive. So a lot of these match up with what I see is the very common mistakes that tend to drain these different aspects of a relationship. And it tends to be emotional intensity. We saw, one of the comments right there, when she gets hurt or he gets hurt, I'm not sure. All I see is Facebook user. This person spirals a lot. If there's a lot of emotional intensity, and I'm talking not just about like anger where, you get really worked up, but I see in cases where there's a lot of depression and the person is just continually shutting down and, oh, woe is me and this isn't any good. Where they're needing a ton of emotional support, that can be overwhelming for a lot of people who don't know how to handle that. I see a lot of individuals who their spouse sounds terrible, but like they're not really high on that emotional intelligence sort of skill. And so when they are faced with a huge amount of emotional intensity, they tend to retreat and they can't relax. I see if there's a lot of desperation or neediness, if we translate that, it's basically, it's a focus on self. I need to feel validated. I need to feel like I need to feel assured. I need you to, approve of me. I need you in my life. another one, a focus on self, which is very much that desperation and neediness connects to that, or a lack of consideration for what your spouse needs. I think one of them, one of the users was saying, being unable to be emotionally supportive. Well, this is what we have right here. If you're focusing on self, or you don't consider what your spouse is needing, you aren't there for them. You know, I'll see my clients where they might be emotionally intense at times. But the reverse is true. Like if your spouse has a high amount of emotion and you can't be there to receive that emotion consistently, it can really deteriorate or drain these things. Trying to push fixes in the relationship before your spouse is ready to come back is another very common mistake that we see. I'm trying to even think of any of my clients that haven't made this mistake, you know, where their spouse is saying, you know, I love you, but I'm not in love with you. And they say, okay, we're going to push on this. You need to work on this. You have to come back right now. Why don't you do this? And they push without really taking into consideration that their spouse is feeling, you know, they're not enjoying these interactions. They can't relax. They can't calm down. They don't enjoy these heavy, heavy discussions. And so it pushes them further away. And one of the last common mistakes that I see with this is believing in single step solutions, you know, and a lot of disappointment or resentment when a single action doesn't lead directly to their spouse coming back. They might say, okay, look, I'm trying. I did this one thing. I tried to ask you out on a date, and now you still don't want to be with me, and you know, getting upset with it. But each of these, I'm going to point out, each of them, if we had to say what is the underlying cause, it's a focus on self rather than taking time to have some empathy and understanding for where your spouse is at.
Yeah, that focus on self, where is that coming from, right? If we actually give ourselves some grace and understand that I am where I am, it's because we get freaked out that our spouse is pulling away from us, that they're saying, I'm actually not in love with you. That doesn't feel good. It feels hurtful. It feels scary. And so we react out of fear. The fight, flight, or freeze response comes in. And then we act out of desperation, right? And we just do these things. We get emotionally intense. We get desperate. We get needy. We're trying to think about what we need. How do I get as much as I can get as fast as I can get it, right? Or just that centeredness on myself. And I don't know what to do. So I end up doing nothing or pushing, which only pushes them further away, right? And so all of those things, if you really consider where you're coming from emotionally, it's very instinctual, but it doesn't serve us well. And so what we need to learn is like emotional processing. So we don't react out of fear. So we react from the higher level of ourselves, which is exactly what we teach you how to do. And when we react from a higher level of ourselves, we're going to go into the next four areas here of things that actually solve this. Okay. So here is a really important awareness that could change your life, right? If you find that, yeah, I am getting desperate. I am getting needy. I am focusing more on myself. It's true. I am, but what else can I do? They're leaving me, and that's not good for me. So I need to protect myself, right? It's not good for my kids, all these things. So when you have that awareness that you're doing these things, it's okay. It's actually good to have that awareness, because now you can realize that's not working. So how do I do something different? And when we start to do different things, then we get different results. So Mark, let's talk about those four things that we need to do instead that are actually going to solve this challenge of I love you, but I'm not in love with you.
All right. So four things, four key areas: empathy, acceptance, validation, confidence. If you can have these items in spades, if you can have a lot of it, you're probably going to be in a much better position to reverse a lot of the damage here. So, and we talk a lot about having empathy, gaining perspective, We talk about this all the time because this is our, you know, the first step in our PATH program is having that understanding, that empathy, that perspective. And the thing is, you know, where I see this going in a poor direction is, you know, exactly what a lot of people are commenting here. They're saying they panic, they push, they're really scared. And as I was saying, the big mistake is where there is so much focus on yourself that you're not really taking time to understand, okay, how could my husband or wife get to this point where there isn't that love in the marriage anymore? Something has created this. This is very closely related to that acceptance. And, you know, we mentioned that a little bit earlier. Someone is commenting about where is God in all this? And if you had, his teachings in mind, you wouldn't be here. And I would agree, you know, there are a lot of good teachings there, but, you know, there has to be some acceptance that perhaps your spouse isn't in that position. And if you can't accept the state of your relationship, you're going to push. And this is what I see time and time again. People are saying, I can't stand the thought of them leaving. They become desperate as perhaps there's a filing for divorce or discussion of divorce or discussion of separation. And they're not taking the time to say, okay, this is where I'm at. This is where my husband or wife is at. I'm going to think calmly about this. And I'm going to accept that they aren't in love with me right now. You have to have that acceptance. Otherwise, you're going to step into that desperation, that fear. And you're going to push them further away. There needs to be some validation. As I was saying, if you have empathy, if you have some acceptance, going to be much easier to be able to hear your spouse out, to validate how they are feeling. Your spouse will not want to talk with you. They're not going to want to be around you. They're not going to want to spend time with you. They're not going to trust you if you don't validate how they are feeling. This doesn't mean that you just say, yeah, you're right, everything, you know, I'm a terrible person. That's not what this is about. If you've listened to us for some time, this is something that I've repeated many times. Feelings are always valid. Always, always valid. How they come to those feelings might not be. So, meaning they might have thought that you were cheating even if you weren't. They might think that you didn't care even if that's not true. But the truth is they feel, you know, perhaps pushed away, perhaps rejected, perhaps they feel uncared for. Mm-hmm. And you need to take the time to say, okay, you know what? That feeling is legitimate. And if you don't, they're not going to feel understood. They're not going to see that you are on their side. And then some confidence. You know, like if you can come at this with some empathy, acceptance, validation, this is a confident position. And if you are scared, if you're desperate, if you're needy, it's the opposite of all this. It's the opposite of confidence, because if you can say, I'm going to hold this space right here, I can be here for you, I can take care of myself and do all this, that's a situation, a stance where your spouse is able to have more attraction to you. Otherwise, it's very unlikely that they will be attracted to you. I'm just going to put it bluntly. Yeah. And I have an example of this for this. I remember what was interesting. I actually read this. I do a lot of reading of articles. I check out other people's websites. I probably spend hours any given week doing this sort of thing. And I actually found this sort of thing on a site written by a guy who was trying to help people pick up women, like trying to flirt or trying to, but I thought it was a great example of all these points. His tagline was like, even if they've been hurt by you, or even if they, you know, all sorts of big claims. But he gave this hypothetical invitation, and I just thought it was a great example. So, you know, it's not the exact invitation, but, you know, like, so Heather, let's pretend here for a second that I'm inviting you to this thing. So Heather, I told you that I am absolutely in love with this vacation spot that my family and I go to. It overlooks the beach. There's a wonderful view at sunset, and we go every year. It's this amazing spot. You know, during the day, you know, my family and I, we get out in the waves. We hit the beach. It's great and relaxing at night. There's this little town nearby, and there's always some interesting things going on, live music, some great restaurants. Now, look, hypothetically, Heather, if I might say, hey, look, I know we maybe have had some fights or we didn't get along. And I get that. I would completely understand if this isn't for you. But, you know, what I was thinking here is I thought you might want to go. As I said, if not, that's fine. I'm going to go have a great time anyway. And if you want to come, great. If you don't, that's all right. And if you want to leave at any time because things are uncomfortable, that's fine. But I'm going to go have some fun. I mean, hypothetically, this sounds like a good situation, right? This is a situation where I'm enjoying my own life and I'm inviting you into it. This is one where I recognize that the situation that we hypothetically might have had, where I'm having a lot of acceptance for how you might feel. I might have some validation here. You know, I could go a little bit further on the empathy, but the key points here is not like I'm hitting all these things and I'm living a life that's great and I'm inviting you into it in this hypothetical situation. And this is why, if you want to be in a great position to reverse the I love you, but I'm not in love with you, this is what's needed. You need to have these things, that empathy, acceptance, validation, some confidence, such that you are living a great life and you're inviting, you're playing host to invite your spouse into that great life. And I think if you can do that, it's a wonderful, great situation to foster that love again.
Agreed. And an important thing to note there is you did have the validation, right? I understand things have been tense, given what's happened. I understand if you don't want to, but then you also do the invitation with no pressure, right? Mm-hmm. If you want to come, I'd love to have you there. But if you're uncomfortable at any time, you can leave. If you don't even want to come, that's okay. But we're going to go have a great time. You're welcome to come if you want to, right? So you've taken all the pressure off, which is important because pressure is only going to push them further away. Yeah. So that's awesome.
We can, instead of a vacation, this could be, you know, just a day at the park or like some time with some friends or whatever you're doing in your life. And, you know, this isn't even about fixing a hypothetical break in our business relationship, Heather, or anything. This is something else. And that's kind of our point here is, I think we've mentioned somewhere in here, this is not about fixing your relationship. You don't want to go about this with that mindset, like I need to fix things. This is about actually enjoying being together. That's what the real problem is here. If they're saying this, they just simply don't enjoy being around you. And if you go about the saying, okay, we need to fix problems, we need to have these heavy discussions and, you know, talk through this, you're probably not in the right place, the right frame of mind to solve this problem.
Exactly. I've learned the power of validation, okay? Because probably like a lot of you, when someone says something to me that isn't true, right, I feel defensive. And I want to defend myself and prove to them that that's not true. Like, well, you just don't really care about this. Like, you don't care about me. Or the other night it was with my 13-year-old. He was doing the world's ending kind of 13-year-old drama thing. And I was trying to show him the world's not ending. This isn't the right attitude to have. And I wasn't validating how he was feeling. And so I remembered, okay, right here, right now, in every situation with my husband, with the way he feels, with my children, even with myself, okay, we are where we are. And whether it's true or whether it's not, or whether it's a combination of both, like Mark said, feelings are always real. And so instead of saying you shouldn't feel that way, or this isn't true, let me show you what is true, or let me prove to you that we can be in love again, right? Instead of trying to prove it to them and change their mind so they come around to our side, it's more like acknowledging, I see that you are feeling very frustrated right now. I see that you're very upset. I see that this has hurt your feelings. I see, right? So this validation of, I see you, and I know that that's where you are. And we're not saying it's right or wrong, like whether it's true or not, because to them it is true. And so we're acknowledging those feelings. And when we do that, when we show that validation, it takes the tension where we're kind of like pitting wills against each other, and it just goes, whoop, like all the tension just leaves the room. And then you're actually able to work on what's needed on both sides. And I could tell my son, I know that you need to feel understood. I know that this is a big deal for you and you want some help to solve it. Is that, you know, tell me what you're needing. And so he did. And then I told him what I'm needing. When we're doing dishes at the end of the day, I don't need like a huge drama of like getting yelling and like making everyone really upset. That isn't solving the problem. And it's not what I need. What I need is a peaceful home where we handle our problems in a respectful manner. So, but the first step to get there was that validation, because the validation is going to take that tension and take it way down. So we both feel understood. And then when we both feel understood, then we're able to problem solve together.
Yes. So should we go to the marriage myth buster really quick? I think we're
absolutely
I'm here. So myth, happy couples do everything together. This is a myth.
This is a myth.
Yeah. So I encounter this sometimes, like the couples that have to do everything together. They have to share all the same hobbies or friends or whatnot. And I don't get me wrong, I do think it's very important to share many interests, to spend time together. Just as a general rule of thumb, you know, I've heard from several different experts, and I agree, you know, it's if you're going to maintain a good relationship, you should have about 5 hours weekly as a couple. But I'm going to say that, and that doesn't really translate to, okay, having to do everything together. You know, one of the things that I actually appreciate about my marriage with Jen is that there are some nights when we can go, you know what, honestly, I just need some time to myself, or you know what, Jen might say, I'm going to go get out with the girls, or I'm going to go do my own thing. And it's okay. So this myth is really important, because what can really, really boost your ability to be relaxed and enjoy each other's company is not needing your spouse for everything. It goes back to the example I was giving just a little bit ago, that if you can be confident on your own, if you can live a full life on your own and invite your spouse into it, that's a great situation to be in. It's also really great to be able to live that life, have that great life, and not need to have your spouse there all the time. Now, I'm not saying here that, okay, you need to purposefully push your spouse away. You say, no, we shouldn't spend time together. It's more like having some acceptance that, hey, sometimes we might have different interests. Sometimes we might want to do different things. Sometimes we might have hobbies that have no appeal to the other person, and that should be okay. Now, for a lot of people, you might be saying, well, no, duh, of course, you're not going to enjoy doing everything together, but I think some of you might be surprised about how often I kind of hear this idea that there should, you know, you should do everything together. And if not, it's a problem. What this sort of idea creates is it is more of that desperation or neediness. It leans into a codependency problem, where if your spouse doesn't want, this is where it's unhealthy, is if your spouse doesn't want to do something with you, is that a problem? Mm-hmm. Now, like I said, okay, there's always a healthy balance. If they're consistently not wanting to do something with you, that's a problem. It's just, can there be acceptance for each of you to have your own life? And then just to, you know, I would say with some frequency, invite the other person into that life. And I think that's probably the ideal stance to have.
Yep. I love that. And I raised my hand because I was one of those. That desperation, that neediness, I felt like we did need to do everything together. And it felt very threatening to me when he wanted to go mountain biking with his brothers all day Saturday, right? Or he wanted to, you know, watch this mechanic show because he wasn't, you know, paying attention to what I wanted to do and all these things. But it really came from this desperation of I didn't feel good enough. And so I had my radar set so high to any form of abandonment, right? Any form of I'm not good enough. And when he rejected something I wanted to do, say it was Sunday afternoon, I'm like, hey, let's go on a walk. I want to go on a walk. Let's go on a walk. And he'd say, no, it wasn't a rejection of the idea to me. It was a rejection of me. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of what we're talking about here, is this very unhealthy level of neediness, codependency, and insecurity about yourself, which then makes you insecure about a relationship. And it could be, you know, any different variety for you, but I'm just kind of giving an example of what I went through until I learned how to feel secure in myself and feel like I was good enough. So I encourage you, if you're feeling that, if these symptoms are kind of popping up for you, to do some self-reflection and see what's going on internally inside of you that's causing this desperation, that's causing this neediness, that's causing, in my case, hypersensitivity, you know? And then when you resolve those things, then you get to that healthier level where it's okay. They can do things and it's not a threat. I can do things and it's okay. If they reject my idea, it's just an idea. They're at a different place. Maybe I need to consider what they're needing. It's not a rejection of me. So, lost Mark. That's all right. Well, we're here at the end anyway. So I encourage you guys, if you're wanting more help with this idea of I love you, but I'm not in love with you, then I encourage you to go ahead and get our free trial of our marriage mastery. Let me put the comment here on the screen if I can. There we go. There it is. So it's relationshiprebootcourse.com, relationshiprebootcourse.com/free trial. And you can get a 14-day free trial of our monthly program. And then, of course, after 14 days, you can choose to cancel it or you can choose to keep it. It's $47 a month. So it's a monthly subscription where you get a new training from Mark himself every single month. And this month's training is exactly on going deeper into what we talked about today, of the I love you, but I'm not in love with you, how to overcome that obstacle. So encourage you guys, if that resonates with you, go ahead and get the free trial. Again, cancel it after 14 days if it's not a good fit, or keep it if you want to be able to get all of these premium monthly trainings that we offer, how to open up communication, how to restore trust, how to end an affair, how to go from we're friends, but there's no romance. Every single one of those kind of challenges that you guys may be facing, that's what it helps with. And you get the whole vault of all of our past trainings as well, which is a huge value. Incredible, incredible, incredible. So you can literally just say, okay, this is my problem. And it's like opening up, you know, the encyclopedia, the book of life, right? And giving you some guidance and perspective there. So encourage you guys to get that, relationshiprebootcourse.com/free trial. And of course, if you're wanting one-on-one coaching with us, we are offering free consultations, as always, at highthrivecoaching.com/apply. But I do want you guys to know, here in October of 2020, as we're recording this, our spots are almost completely full. So if you aren't able to join now, then you can be added to a waitlist. So I just want to let you guys know, not trying to pressure anything, just letting you guys know about what's going on there. So huge gratitude to Mark for sharing this with us today. Thank you so much, Mark. I know you're not here right now, but we are grateful for you and the incredible work that you're doing. So again, my friends, no matter where you are currently in your marriage, in your relationship, know that it is possible to turn this around. We are the ICU for marriages, and we've helped tens of thousands of students just like you guys in the exact situation. 95% of the time they say, I want out, and you're wondering, what can I do? We have the PATH process that helps you to get there so that you restore trust, you reconnect, and you get them back in love with you again. So that's my intention for you. I'm holding space for you in that you no longer ever hear your spouse say the words, I love you, but I'm not in love with you. All right. So thank you for oh my goodness, I'm getting tongue-tied right here at the end. Thank you so much for joining us today. Maybe someday I'll be an articulate communicator, but until then, you're just going to have to deal with my blunderings. So next week, it's going to be a secret. It's going to be a surprise. So I encourage you guys to join next week. Thank you all for coming, and we'll talk to you again.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.